Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. I'm Jonathan Friedman in the studio, joined by my next guest, Stacy Friends from Roberto Israel and Weiner. Welcome.
Thank you.
It's good to see you. Nice to have you in the studio.
Yep. You too. Thanks for having me back.
It's always a pleasure. Our friends at Roberto Israel and Weiner. If you want to talk a little bit about your practice and about the firm in general, and then we can get into, I know, a topic that you want to talk about. You want to talk about branding and how companies protect themselves. But why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the firm?
Sure. So the firm is a general business firm. We do corporate work, technology, licensing, intellectual property, general commercial litigation, and trust and estate. And a banking group too. So
wide range.
Yeah, kind of full service. And we're a small firm, so we're it's just great people there. Seriously.
I can honestly concur. Having known many of the people over there and worked with many of them, great group of attorneys.
Great people and really very business oriented. You know, we obviously are lawyers. We're doing the legal work, but we're also, we also have our eye on the business aspects to any transaction that we're doing. So it's a great place to work. And my practice is trademark and copyright. And the copyright side of the practice is similar to entertainment law, basically. It's a lot of licensing in the area of works that are covered by copyright. The trademark side is I think what we're going to talk about today, because there's some sort of burning issues in my practice right now with branding and choosing brands and how trademark law affects that.
So why don't we open it up with you talking a little bit about it, about branding, and you know, generally these are often new businesses or established businesses that come to you with a need, or they're exposed in some way, I assume. Is that a fair assumption that they have not protected themselves in some capacity?
Right. It's really all over the map. I have businesses that come to me that have been in business for a long time, and so they all of a sudden have usually there's some issue. There's a conflict of some kind, and they realize they have to do what they needed to do to register the mark and protect it and maybe deal with this enforcement issue. Or it's a new business that has a brand new trademark or brand. It could be an older business that has some new product or service of some kind that they want to call something different, or they have a new logo. So there's many different reasons why people come to me.
I hate to throw you a curveball early on in the discussion, and hopefully it's not one you can say if you don't, but I'm imagining that the statistics are relatively low for businesses that actually do register their brands and copyright things. I don't know if there's any national statistics available, but my guess is it's an afterthought for a lot of businesses.
That's a really good question. Yeah, I think certainly for companies of any size, it's done. It's sort of on the checklist. You know, form your LLC, clear your brand, which we'll talk about, and then register it. For smaller businesses, maybe family-owned businesses, I think it is an afterthought or not thought of at all. They have it and they just use it. Thankfully, in this country, you do have trademark rights just based on using it. So you don't.
So based on duration or first in type thing.
Yeah, so. Senior user, first user. Yeah, first user wins. So that's helpful. It's not helpful, though, if you end up having an issue, like somebody else using the mark somewhere else and there's a risk of consumer confusion, then it's really helpful to have the registration. It's very hard to enforce without it. You can. I do it all the time, but it's hard, and we usually do end up registering it on the fly to get it in to give us a little bit more security. Because if you're not on the register, and if people don't know about you or they can't find you, now we can find most people on the internet, but say you can't or you don't come up on the first page of a Google search, then that person might think that that mark is clear and start using it themselves. And now you have a problem.
And there are certain databases where things are registered formally.
Yeah.
And so,
right.
And consumers generally don't have access to those databases?
No, or? it's the USPTO.gov is the website. It's the United States Government Patent and Trademark Office. Yeah, and that website is available to the public. The problem is a lot of people don't know about it. They don't think about it, or they know about it and they go on and they maybe need some help searching. The search engine is That
not,
site
not that
is
intuitive.
No, it's not always intuitive to people, and the site is also full of trademark, you know, legalese and lingo. So, I think it can sometimes be hard for people. Sometimes people come to me, a business, and they say, "Well, we looked on the USPTO website, and it looks good." And then I find something just because of how they searched right. Yeah.
You make a great point. If I'm searching for something on Google, I'm going to have hits if I search on a particular string. But if I'm not using the same language of,
right.
It's very difficult to find things.
Right.
So.
Or the opposite happens. Sometimes I have good news. They'll do a search and they'll find something. And then I just do a little bit more digging into it, and I realize that the goods and services are very different, so it shouldn't be a problem. Or I realize that it's dead. Comes up in one of the search sort of result pages, but that's not something that's always found right away. So sometimes there's good news, sometimes there's bad news on that PTO website. But I mean, the main issue is, for brands is it distinctive enough to function as a brand or as a trademark? And that is one issue that I see all the time. People like to choose what I'll call descriptive marks, rather than something kind of a little bit more inventive or suggestive. They want to call their business exactly what it is or what it does, thinking that, well, then consumers will immediately know what I do. True, but that's a short-term gain with long-term problems, and I deal with that all the time, trying to lead people away from marks that are descriptive and say what they do. Those are very, very difficult, if not impossible, to enforce. If you can imagine, if you called yourselves, let's just use an example, South Shore Granite.
Right.
And you're a granite store on the South Shore. Other people need to use the word South Shore. Other people may sell granite, need to use the word granite. That's what are you going to do with that? You know, somebody else comes up with South Shore Granite, or they say South Shore Granite Store or something else. It's you can't really
They're
stop
not really
people.
Infringing. You're not
no,
doing
like
enough.
How can you? Right. I mean, right. it's a word, and it is what you kind of need to use those words. So those are terrible. That's just an example, but those are really hard to. They're really hard to enforce. They're impossible to register. The only way to do it is if you've been using it for a very, very long time, and you actually have built up some distinctiveness just from sheer longevity and publicity and stuff. Then it's possible, but. You can't do it right away.
So there are certain criteria associated with registering. You mentioned distinctiveness.
Yeah.
So in terms of new company or an existing established brand, thinking about how do we register this, or what's the path towards registering? What are some of the things that they should be thinking about? Distinctiveness is one criteria. What are the other criteria to think about?
Yeah, I mean, the main issues that the USPTO will look at are that, is it distinctive enough to function as a trademark? And also, is it clear, meaning does somebody else have something similar for similar goods or services? So that's the basis of trademark law. It's actually, it does benefit businesses. It's often thought of as like a business-friendly law, but it's really meant to be a consumer protection law. To prevent consumers from being confused in the marketplace, to encountering two marks that look the same and are for similar products or services and being confused about the source. That's the actual basis for the law. So that's the other thing that will be looked at in examination is there anything else on the register that is similar and for similar goods and services?
And it's category specific, so it is for similar goods and services.
Right.
So if you had Dave's Pool and you were selling pool tables, or you had Dave's Pool and you're selling pools, that's a distinct category in a sense.
Yeah,
that may
I mean,
be a bad example, but
it's well, because you're talking about two descriptive marks. So, right. But let's say you had. I'm trying to think of a mark that's not super famous. What's another? Let's think of another brand. Let's say everything I can think of is really famous. All right, let's just say Costco. Okay, so there's Costco, the stores. And let's just pretend, let's take the famousness out of it, because that's another issue.
A new upstart called Costco.
That's another issue. Yeah, and then so Costco does what they do. They're these big sort of bulk stores. And then maybe somebody else has Costco and it's an auto repair store or a chain of auto repair stores. Like that would probably be... That might be okay because they're really doing different things. The fact that they're both retail maybe doesn't help them, but I mean, maybe, I don't know, the food product company or something, it might be okay. I don't know. These are bad examples.
So are those the types of things when does it become an issue? How does it become an issue? Is it that somebody feels that you're violating and on your turf, so to speak?
Yeah.
And so consumers are potentially confused. And
Right.
then that's when a suit arises or cease and desist or what have you.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. So
causes a whole host of other problems for business, obviously.
So two marks with the same, same sort of common distinct term and for similar services, like, let's say, pick a word, any word, Blackstone, let's say Blackstone and somebody else is BlackRock and they're both insurance companies. That would be a problem.
Okay.
Right. Cause they are different, but they're pretty close. And the second word, one is stone, one is rock. It's a similar kind of meaning. And in the same industry, that would be a problem. And there'd definitely be an enforcement issue going on there. The other thing that I find is, RIW has a huge restaurant practice. And this happens a lot to our restaurant clients where they open up and they have a certain name that's distinctive. And then somebody opens up a restaurant in Florida with the same exact name. And then now you have, because they're a restaurant, you have this geographic thing going on too. Like, is it okay because they're far? I think that's a lot of people think. But in these days where everybody is on the internet and people travel like crazy and a Google search will turn up all these people in a list, it's more important that they are not the same, even if they're far.
So trademark and copyright laws are national in scope? It's not
right.
It's not enforced at a state or local level at all?
That's right. They're federal. They're both based on federal law. Yeah.
Okay.
So. And this PTO system, once you do register, that gives you nationwide rights. Even if you really, you're based in Massachusetts. If you've shown that you're in interstate commerce, meaning you're selling your goods or services outside of the state, then you've registered it with the USPTO, then you have nationwide rights, and you can prevent the use by anyone else in California or Florida or wherever.
Now, I know another area where I've seen trouble arises when you have a company with a well-recognized brand, and let's just say Coca-Cola, for example, and then company X, whether they're offshore or not, starts to produce product with a similar name, licensed goods.
Right.
Leveraging off of that brand.
Right.
Is that something that is obviously enforceable if you're, using Coke, I don't know, the phrase, and that may be a registered trademark, so maybe another bad example, but something to create a product that is not a beverage, a product that is totally unrelated, a t-shirt, a pen, whatever it may be.
Yeah, I kind of alluded to this earlier. That's why I said, let's take the mark is famous out of the picture, because there's a different part of the trademark law called dilution. It's a completely different part of the law, and it's just for famous marks, like famous, widely recognizable by any consumer, that kind of famous.
And who makes that determination?
There's an analysis that you have to go through for that to sort of show that, but that's basically it. It's a little bit subjective, but it's mostly a no-brainer. It's McDonald's and
large multinational.
Yeah, the very large like multinational companies, and then it's and there've been some really I've studied this a bunch because I've had some cases dealing with this. I had a fitness club in Germany. Trying to come into the States with a mark that began the same way as a large national fast food chain. And that's not going well because, the theory with dilution is if the mark becomes famous enough, consumers will associate anything with it.
Sure.
And they may...
Irrespective of what the category is.
And this is different from being confused.
Mm-hmm.
They're just talking about an association with it. So... then the question is there an association? And then the next question is, does that take away from that famous brand in some way? So a famous case was Victoria's Secret, and there was a store that opened up called Victor's Little Secret. And they sold different items than Victoria's Secret, a little more scandalous. And that was a big case. And Victoria's Secret prevailed in the end, and there was a tarnishment issue. So the mark was similar. People may or may not be confused, but does it affect that Does it affect the Victoria's Secret brand? And absolutely, that's what the decision was. Yes. It kind of casts them in a negative light.
Interesting. So if there are a couple of high-level things for business owners to think about, what can you leave our listeners with in terms of thinking about their brand and how to copyright and protect themselves?
Yeah, with your brand, I really want people to try to be creative. Make up a word. Those are great marks. Xerox, Kodak, whatever. Or pick a word that is a word and apply it to your goods and services that are very different. Like Apple for computers. Apple is a word in the dictionary, but has nothing to do with computers. Or Lotus, you know, the old Lotus mark for same thing. Anything like that, that just is, that's called an arbitrary mark. It's very strong. You should have, assuming it's clear, you'd have no trouble using that mark and protecting it, enforcing it, registering it. Those are great. Suggestive marks are good too. Like Copper Tone for sunscreen is a good mark, right? You can kind of think about it and maybe guess at what it is, but maybe not. Yeah, those are good marks too. So choose wisely is the first point. And then the second point is search or hire somebody to properly search and make sure your mark's clear before you get going down the road with it, because that's a real showstopper if you get down the road with a mark and you find out somebody else already has it registered or is using it and their senior user.
Can be very costly.
It can be costly. You have to redo it. Think about it. You have to redo everything.
Right. All the marketing dollars that you sunk in.
That's
right. Rebrand yourself.
Start over. So it's not worth it.
Excellent. Good stuff. I know, Stacey, we can probably talk for hours on the subject.
But, probably.
That's all the time that we have for today. I want to thank our guest, Stacey Friends of Roberto Israel Weiner. Thank you so much for coming in. And if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Probably by email, sfriends@riw.com.
With an
and
S
it's
on the
friends
end.
Just like the TV show, yeah.
Excellent. Royalties for that? Anyways, we'll be right back with another segment on Radio Entrepreneurs.